Welcome to another episode of the Gay Barchive Show, where we explore gay entertainment and nightlife from the past. Our special guest today is Chris Coleman, an Atlanta entrepreneur, club manager, and event promoter.
So, Chris, as you know, for the last year, I have been spending a lot of time recording the history of gay bars across the country. Mm-hmm. And there are quite a few. Up to this day, I've gotten up to 1,300 gay bars that no longer exist in the U.S. And just today, I got a list emailed to me from some historians in Chicago that includes an additional 700 Chicago bars, gay bars that have existed and gone out of business.
700 just in Chicago?
Just in Chicago. So the reason I wanted to talk with you, though, is I know that you have an extensive experience in entertainment and with gay events as well as mainstream events. And I thought you might have a unique perspective on the evolution of that aspect of gay nightlife. You've worked with a lot of different bars and nightclubs. You've done a lot of big events. So tell us a little bit about what it's like when you started and how it's changing as you progress forward.
Well, I started off as a patron. I moved to Atlanta 31 years ago. And my first gay bar experience, I didn't know it was even a gay bar. It was actually in Dallas, Texas. It was called Babies. Have you heard of that bar?
Yes, I have.
Okay, so I went to Babies and ended up going to school in East Texas. And then when I moved to Atlanta in 1990, I was a patron. And then my first event really wasn't until 2003. So for 13 years, I was just really a patron. And then I branched off into doing my first party. And I think the evolution really has been 99% because of the internet. I think as when the internet came along around 2000, when it actually, I think when guys started using the internet to meet people, that's when we saw a larger evolution of the gay scene dwindling on a social bar scene and becoming more of a digital platform. So, and I think that evolution is still happening. It's just so easy to meet people online from the comfort of someone's own home or own bed or wherever, and to take a shower and get dressed and, you know, clean up and go somewhere. You know, for people like us, and I think I'm speaking for you as well, that's something I enjoy doing. I think the want it now, gotta have it now, hurry up, is a younger mentality. And I think that's an internet, a casualty of the internet, really, is somebody wanting something so quickly. And the evolution has really gone from a heavy social scene, again, in my opinion, a really heavy social scene where, you know, there's 50, 60 bars just in Atlanta that are gay themed, down to just a handful. And it's because of the internet. I'm not saying it's any better, any worse. It's just a large evolution.
Well, there have been a lot of changes. I don't know. I think you're probably a little bit too young to remember, but before we got to the disco era, and that really kicked in, the bar scene for gays was very segregated. I mean, if you went to a bar, the first few bars I went to in the late 70s, they were all white and all male. You did not see women in the bars. You did not see Hispanics or any people of color whatsoever. They had their own little bars somewhere, but they were not really integrated. And once the discos and the big parties came around is when you started to see that integration. Bars like Backstreet, I'm sure you've been to Backstreet in Atlanta. You know, bars like that were so big and so popular that you could run into everybody. Straight, gay, bi, black, white, blue, male, female, transgender, whatever. Right. They were all there. That kind of started our community being a little bit more integrated. And that's really kind of when we moved to from, you know, back then, everything was gay. It wasn't LGBT. There was no such thing as multiple letters. It was gay.
I remember when the acronym came around because it started as GLBT. I remember that.
It did. Mm-hmm. And then the lesbians pushed us out of the way and decided they wanted front row seating.
Right.
Now, with your events, you said you started your first event in 2003. What kind of an event was that?
That was the Thanksgiving Eve party. And it was a dance party at a club back then. It was called 1150, which evolved into a club called Opera, which is evolved into another. I don't even know the name of it anymore because I'm out of the scene in that part of the scene. But that club, when I moved here, was called Petrus. Then from Petrus, it was called Axis. Then Axis to 1150, and then to Opera, and then whatever it is now.
And you know, the building, if I'm not mistaken, because I went to Petrus many times, that building was the old women's club, wasn't it? It was like a two-story older block building. It was stone building.
The home that faces Peachtree is an old mansion built right around 1900 and became a women's club, I think as early as the 20s. But behind it was a like playhouse or opera house that was attached to the women's club. And that was the nightclub. So if you go online and look at Opera's website, you'll see remnants of the old playhouse stage and the trim, like around the stage is all very, you know, late Gilded Age, 1920s, 1930s. It's actually pretty cool.
Yeah. Peter Gation, the guy who is probably best known for Limelight, is the one who actually converted that to Petrus.
Okay.
Petrus is the Greek version of his name, Peter. And and it also means stone. So he converted that to Petrus, and they did a fabulous job of reviving the building and making it very glamorous and upscale. Petrus had a really nice restaurant section. Where they serve nice brunches and things like that, a beautiful outdoor area with fountains
and a pool.
And my first memory of that bar, there were two particularly fond memories of that bar. And you can probably imagine this knowing the space. One was when it was still on the charts. It had just come out. Paul Lukakis performed live there. Boom, boom, boom. Let's go back to my room.
Yeah.
And at that time, I had interviewed him and I asked him, you know, if he was gay or how he labeled himself. And he came right out and said, I don't like labels. And then like a few years later, he was obviously gay and everybody knew it. But at that time, he was still kind of skirting the issue. And then after that, they had an event there that was done in conjunction with Trojan Condoms. And they had a horse and a Trojan knight on horseback riding through the bar, tossing out condoms to everybody.
Wow, that's cool.
Kind of memorable.
Yeah, that's a neat marketing ploy for Trojan.
So you you did your first event there, and it was a Thanksgiving event. Was it a gay event at that time, or was it just kind of whatever?
It really wasn't gay at all, and I think that was part of my brand was to have a party at a super club. Not that I was poo-pooing the clubs at the time, because at that point Backstreet was actually still open, and I don't think Backstreet closed till like 2006. But I wasn't, you know, poo-pooing the clubs. I just wanted something different,
right?
And Hotlanta was either wrapping up around then or it had already stopped, and there weren't I noticed that some of the bigger parties were just starting to fade already. And I think the internet was already getting a little bit of a hold on how people met each other, And I thought, I'm going to revitalize this and do something really different outside the box. And I went to New York and I met up with Manny Lehman, who I had become friends with. And we went to a show and had dinner and hung out. And I told him, I said, I'm thinking about having a party. He's like, well, you should, a lot of people. That's really all it is. It's just gathering the crowds. Right. And I said, well, would you come and play? And he's like, yeah. So I hit up his manager and that's exactly how it went down.
Now, since then, you've done many, many parties and events. What is one of the most memorable accomplishments you have in the event arena? Something that you've done that you just either couldn't believe you pulled it off, or you were just so amazed that it went so fabulously.
How much I branched and just spiderwebbed. And in 2010, I believe, was out of 365 days, I did like 155 events in 365 days.
Wow.
So it was basically every other day. Yeah, it was basically every other day, basically.
So you didn't get any sleep that year?
That was, I got it when I could get it. Yeah, exactly. But it was dinner parties. It was pool parties. It was after hours. It was main events. It was holiday Sundays. It was just, if I could do it, I was jumping in. And I think that year 2010 sticks out in my head so much because of what I was able to accomplish and achieve and have that kind of diversified support of people wanting to go out to eat, people wanting to go and go party at 6 a.m. and after hours and everything in between. And that was just a really neat moment.
So I know from my knowledge of some of your events that you've worked with some pretty big names. You've done some events with, I think, Boy George, Leslie mm-hmm. Jordan, people that are on the national or international radar. And right. you've also done events with people that are more, regional or local celebrities of sorts. What are some of the most memorable experiences you've had with some of those people that were involved with, with people like Boy George or Leslie Jordan
right.
or Kennedy, whoever it happens to be?
Again, two things pop in my head. The first one is Leslie, because Leslie and I have become such good friends. It's not really about the business part anymore at all, even though when we do work together, it goes very well. But just making a lifelong friend of someone that I admire is such a home run for me, the fact that he trusts me as much as he does and tells me things that he knows I would never repeat about what he has coming up and his personal life and his shortfalls. And, I know some real dirt on Leslie Jordan. I mean, some real dirt. And, the fact that we're that close of friends is just something I never would have thought I would meet someone that was that talented and that I actually could become an intimate friend with. So that's number one. Number two, I had a party at the W Hotel with Kelly Rowland, Christine W, and Frenchie Davis. And when you mentioned, what memory do I have, that popped in my head as I've been talking. I thought about, working with Paula Abdul. And I've worked with Adam Lambert. The people are popping in my head now, but I think that moment with Kelly Rowland, Christine W, and Frenchie Davis was like a turning point for me, because I was getting more in the celebrity arena, and making those contacts with those managers led me to other celebrities and other events. And so that was a pivotal moment for me as well. And all three of those women are just amazing, humble and talented and yeah, great.
I found from my experience when I've met celebrities at various events, especially if there are events that are more social, you know, they're not going out on a book signing tour or something, but it's at a party or whatever,
yeah,
that most of the celebrities, almost without exception, have been pretty genuinely nice people. There's mm-hmm. only a few that I've ever met that were just real, you know, bitches all the time. But
I had one, and I don't mind telling you who it was. It was Josh Flagg from
Million Dollar Listing.
Yes. I did he had a book, and I flew him in for a book signing, and he was just terrible. And he got, I don't care. He got so intoxicated that in the middle of the dinner, he ended up getting sick. It was just a nightmare. The whole thing was just a nightmare.
I understand. I had a similarly tragic experience with Chastity Bono. While she was still Chastity.
Oh, wow.
She was coming to Tampa for a Pride celebration. She was one of the Grand Marshals along with Greg Louganis, I believe it was. Mm-hmm. And there was nothing prideful about her. I think she was doing it because GLAAD had threatened to slice her into pieces after making some homophobic remarks or something, doing something not nice. And this was her way of redemption. She was wearing this hideous brown polyester outfit, which is not something you wear at Pride. And she was just rude and unfriendly. And I called her out at the event, but she, and then of course now she's Chaz Bono,
right.
Which is kind of surprising because you would think some of that show business, you know how would have rubbed off from her two parents, but apparently.
Right. No, clearly not.
And Greg Louganis, as I recall, was not particularly friendly either. But for the most part, they all have been. I mean, it's a lot of people don't realize that. But if somebody were chasing you down the street, you know, pulling on your shirt tails and asking you to sign their autograph or take a photograph every 5 seconds, you'd probably get pretty, you know, bitter too.
That happened with Boy George. When I was with Boy George, it was like, it was really terrible. And he was really irritated because people were pulling on him, like physically, like pulling on clothes and stuff.
I don't understand.
Yeah.
I do not understand that. So where do you see the future going now? I'm sure in the last 12 months, your business, as far as, you know, big events, has slowed down considerably. And I've talked to some other event producers that have done mega events at gigantic bars around the country, and they tell me that their business has slowed down. Do you mm-hmm. see it bouncing back in a few months or by the end of the year once this COVID thing starts to pass? Or have people become complacent with not doing events?
I think it's the first thing you said. I think people are wanting to go out. I think they're clamoring to go out, and they're waiting for the green light from the CDC and from the president to give them the right confidence to go out again. I think the want is there. I just think the hesitation is there, and I completely understand it. I'm involved. I'm not involved really in right now. Anyways, I'm not gonna say I never will again, but right now I'm not involved in any sort of club event. But I am involved as a producer in an upcoming music festival in Atlanta. And it's September 11th, which is a Saturday. And it's a 12-hour festival from noon until midnight, approximately 30 DJs, 3 stages. And it's at a Live Nation owned venue called Lakewood Amphitheater.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah. Excellent. I have,
Will people be able to see online or?
I don't have the website done yet. It's probably 90% done. And literally all the feedback I've received has been of excitement. You know, some of the feedback has been, you know, hey, be careful on when you begin your advertising just because of COVID. You don't want to send the message of, you know, hey, I don't care, I'm going to be unsafe. And I totally get that. So we're going to time all of our marketing with the reopening of venues and when the mayor of Atlanta, I had a meeting with the mayor's office day before yesterday, and they gave me some very specific information on when the venues with public gatherings will happen again in Atlanta. I actually have a physical date of when that's going to happen. And once those dates are released to the public, at that point, we can begin our marketing campaign on when we're going to start marketing to the masses. But I had a Zoom call with Johnny Chisholm from New Orleans, Patty Rossetto from LA, spoke to Mark Baker about this. I spoke to Hilton Woolman in Florida. He was on the Zoom call as well. And Pyron Finney was on the Zoom call. And we had a really great conversation about this whole thing. And Power has some reservations, but other than Power, the response is just great. And it's going to be something that really hasn't happened. It's taking that 4 or 5 hour dance club party and turning it into a 12-hour party. And I think, you know, around the September 11th time, the weather is still, I personally think it's still hot. It's still upper 80s here. But at night gets into the 70s and it's really beautiful. So I think weather-wise, we're hitting it right. I think timing-wise, we're hitting it right with the release of the vaccines for COVID-19. So we'll see how it goes. But right now, we got on the hook. We haven't signed any contracts because of COVID, but on the hook, we have Danny Taneglia, Dave Audé, Victor Calderon, Chusen Ceballos. I'm thinking in my head here. Spoken to Alan Jakinski from Montreal, who's on the circuit side, and a couple others I'm not going to say.
Very cool. So you're kind of reinventing the club experience in a really huge venue, which, mm-hmm. you know, because obviously since the disco era died and things have moved into the 21st century, there aren't that many mega clubs left.
Right.
You know, the really, really big clubs, a lot of those are gone and you're seeing a lot of smaller venues. But in your case, with this event, you'll be kind of bringing it back to a large venue that is similar to what we might have partied in the late 80s, early 90s.
Sure, you know? Yeah, pre-internet, absolutely.
So for a lot of these people, the younger people, it'll be an experience that they haven't had before, or
right.
not quite to that extent.
And we have trademarked the name, so we're taking the EDM acronym, the Electronic Dance Music acronym, and we're putting an LGBT twist on it. So instead of EDM, it's called Gay-DM. So gay dance music.
Excellent. We'll be looking forward to that.
Me too. That cool. Yeah, thanks.
Any memories of big gay discos or the big gay clubs? Is there ever one that you went to and it just blew you away because it was so fabulous?
Well, yes, I'm going to say the Roxy in New York City blew me away every time I went there. Atlanta, I you know, it's such a cliche to say Backstreet, but Backstreet to me wasn't a big club, but the energy in there and the experience was just so off the chart that I would compare it to any other experience I ever had. And the fact that it was 24 hours was just really great because there was no looking at the watch and no last call and, you know, but I know you said blew me away. And I think you're of course thinking of Grandiose and oh my God, look at this place. But I think where my mind goes is more of a darker space. And in 94, a club closed called The Cove in Atlanta. And I lived here. I moved here in 90. So for 4 years it was open and I was young. I moved here at 23. And I'm 53 now. So this is exactly 30 years ago. And that I truly to this day tell stories and people are like, no, they could not have happened. And the fact that that was going on in Atlanta, Georgia, you know, another 24-hour late night spot that served alcohol and the debauchery that was going on there, just really to this day, it will never be matched, no matter what circuit party I've been to or hosted or produced, or it'll never be reproduced.
I know it will. I've had many conversations. People don't understand, you know, especially the younger people. Mm-hmm. But as I've gone into this project and spoken more and more to people about their bar experiences and their clubs and the nightlife scene in the past, Atlanta did have a unique situation because at that time frame, we even had an acronym. I don't know if you ever heard it, but we had an acronym that we used to say we were doing our ABC. And doing your ABC meant you were starting your evening at the Armory. You're starting your evening at the Armory, going to Back Street, and then the Cove. So ABC. And people are still blown away by the fact that Backstreet and the Cove were not only gay clubs, but they were 24-hour a day, always serving alcohol gay clubs. Yes. And that is what, you know, I know dozens of people now who said they've gone to Backstreet on Friday night and didn't see daylight until Sunday morning or Monday. They just never left the bar, which is kind of scary. But that's one of the reasons I want to do this project, is so that people who haven't been able to experience it get a better understanding of what our club scene was like 20 and 30 years ago and how it helped bring us together as a community to help us get to where we are today with our civil rights and our, you know, our gay presence. That never would have happened without all these bars building community. I mean, I'm sure you still have fond memories of friends from the Cove or from Backstreet or wherever that became your pals because you partied together week after week. It's quite a different experience than the way the club scene is today.
Absolutely. The only dance club in Atlanta is the Heretic, which is just really amazing to either utter those words. A city like Atlanta, Georgia has one gay dance club.
I know.
This is really incredible.
I agree. It's not your typical disco dance club because they do a lot of country western and bear type events. So it's not your typical, you know, like Backstreet or whatever disco. It's a totally different environment.
Exactly. So it's I really believe that the internet is the reason for the demise of the gay club. But I will say too that a lot of people in the LGBTQ community just don't really say, well, this is not a gay club, so I'm not gonna go there. I think the younger people are saying, I'm gonna go where I wanna go, and it doesn't matter that it's not labeled a gay club. They don't care as much anymore.
Right. But I think it's a little unfortunate because it hinders building that community. Because if you go into a mainstream club, even if they accept you, you're probably not going to make lifelong friends with a bunch of people there. You know, you're just dancing next to them or drinking next to them. You know, the world evolves, just evolve along with it and find ways to adjust and continue going on.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And what I'm doing now on top of the music festival is I've been working with Tokyo Valentino very closely. We have a social space here that's 24/7, and we've built it into, over the past 5 years since I took over this position, we built it into a really unique space that I think is really unmatched in the United States. And it takes a physical experience to understand what I'm talking about to check out the venue here.
Yeah, I was there about 6 years ago when Michael had just kind of completed the construction over there. And I was blown away by what he did. I mean, Insurrection was a little bit of a roadside attraction, kind of dated looking building at that time. It needed a facelift. And boy, he went full board, inside and out.
It's completely different again. The inside, which you saw 6 years ago of the social space, you won't recognize it. It's now three levels. It was one and a half. 6 years ago, it was one and a half floors. Now it's three full levels.
Yeah, and I know, you know, Michael's a great advocate of our community. He does a great job with both the retail store and the adjacent space. Mm-hmm. And everything he does is all with quality, which is nice to see. I mean, back in the day when he was getting his feet wet and starting the Insurrection franchise, some of those stores were a little seedy. You know, they were a little dingy. But I've told so many people, they don't even understand. When you go into his retail store, it's like going to a Victoria's Secret or a Neiman Marcus gift shop. It's not like going to one of those dark places where you have to hide your head and feel embarrassed if your neighbor sees you walking through the store.
Right.
It's a gorgeous facility with amazing inventory. And it's the same kind of thing with his clubs. And I know when he did his promotions and things, he was the same way. He's probably a lot like you in that respect, that he's a little bit of a perfectionist and wants everything to be top-notch quality and not, you know, cut corners to make an extra 50 cents. So
exactly. Yeah. I mean, the amount of money we've spent in the past year just in the club downstairs in making it more of an amazing experience is, I just think, is unparalleled, especially in the gay community here. There's no doubt about that.
I'm quite sure. Well, I'm glad to know that you've been such a part of the community and helping with all these kind of events and working with Michael on the projects at Tokyo Valentino. And we'll look forward to when you actually get to do your music festival in September and maybe do another little segment to promote that when it comes closer to the time and you're ready to do it.
I'd really appreciate that. I'll for sure. Once I have a one sheet or a true announcement, then I'll get that to you guys and we can schedule another call.
Excellent. Well, I hope you have a fabulous weekend and thank you for sharing some of your memories with us.
Yeah, man. Thank you. You guys have a good weekend.
You too.
All right.
Thanks, Chris.
Bye-bye.
And that concludes another segment of the Gabe Archives podcast. You can find more podcasts at GabeArchives.com/podcast. We also have more information about this podcast and links to the other podcasts we have completed. We hope you enjoy your trip down memory lane.